And everyone give a warm welcome to Dana, our speaker tonight from the Friends of Bill W. Home Group.
Good evening, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Dana.
Hey, Dana.
Thank you all for inviting me here to share my experience, strength, and hope. On the way here, me and Larry were talking, and I got out of the Navy in 1968 out of Little Creek. And I said, it's kind of funny, here I am 45 years later speaking. You know, who would ever thought that would happen? Just, I guess, because I moved back to California. I've been here now for 14 years. I moved back here in 2010 because of my daughter, my granddaughter, and now they're living in our hometown. So never follow your kids, that's what I'm trying to say. My sobriety date is August 17th of 2002. I picked up my first drink when I was 17. During the Vietnam War, I'd just gotten out of high school. My older brother and my cousin got drafted. So I went down to the Army to join the Army, and the Army recruiter goes, what did you join the Army for? I said, I want to go to Vietnam. He said, what are you going to Vietnam for? I said, my brother and my cousin are going. He said, well, we don't send family after war no more. He says, go across the hall and talk to the Navy recruiter. So I went across the hall and talked to the Navy recruiter. He says, yeah, join the Navy, man. We'll put you on a ship out to Treasure Island. I live in California. We sent you basic training in San Diego. And 3 days later, I was doing a physical. We'd been over in Oakland. Passed my physical and everything. I got my orders. You know, and he said, well, yeah, San Diego basic training. And I got my orders, took my orders. USS Fort Snelling, Little Creek, Virginia. The ship. Basic training, Great Lakes, Illinois. And I go, what the hell is this, man? Talk to you know. So they were lying to me. So anyway, I went to basic training for 3 months, got out, and went home for 2 weeks. When I got out of basic training, I didn't have any money to catch a plane home, so they put me on a train for 2 days. They used up two days of my leave, you know, and it ticked me off. And then when I got home, to come back to Virginia, I didn't have any money for an airline ticket either, so I went to the Catholic Church, Father Hall, the Catholic Church, he used to be at the Catholic Church I went to, Catholic school. They paid for my airline ticket back to Virginia, you know. I grew up in poverty. I used to be out in the fields, my mom and dad picking tomatoes. 7, 8, 9 years old. The box is a little bit bigger than this and about this deep, and there's 10 cents a box. Fill the box, you got 10 cents. We lived in the project for 8 years. The city would bring us turkey dinner for Christmas, Thanksgiving, and a Christmas tree and a present for each one of the kids. And we're kind of poor. We used to go to school, walk to school, walk home, and my mom, she'd just throw together some spaghetti with tomato sauce or something in it, because we didn't have no money to eat, you know? And one day, the Catholic bus stopped in front of our house, and Father Hall got out, came and knocked on the door. My mom and dad said, can we help you? And he goes, yeah, he says, Catholic Church wants your kids to go to Catholic school. They said, we don't have no money. And I was 10 years old at the time, and He said, don't worry about it, we're gonna pay for it. So I got to go to Catholic school. I got to wear salt and pepper, corduroy pants, a white shirt, short sleeve with a collar, new shoes, got to ride the bus to school every day, back and forth, got a free lunch every day, got to join the choir, sang in the choir on Sundays at church, and I was there for 4 years. And that was, they talked about spiritual awakenings in the program, that white light and type thing. That was my spiritual awakening. To this day, that was my spiritual awakening. It got me out of that, where the life I was living, you know. And when I was, I think I was like 5 or 6 years old, it's my older brother, it was Christmas, and my older brother got a brand new bike. And I like my mom and dad bought me a little metal car, truck or something. So I go, okay, next Christmas, I'm gonna get a bike. Gave me another little truck. So what I did, when I turned 10, I got a job delivering newspapers in the projects. I started out with like 25 customers, and I built that up to about almost 100 customers. And back in the day, I didn't have bikes. I had to walk around this little metal thing with wheels on it. sack of papers on and deliver them. And I got my first bike from working delivering papers because I had to use the money to buy my own bike, you know. But my family is my dad, my four uncles, and my grandfathers were alcoholics. I watched them as I grew up. My grandfather was a Skid Row wino. We used to go down, my grandmother would tell my dad if he'd go down and help find them. So me and my dad and my two brothers, we'd go down to Skid Row and look for my grandfather in the alleys. And there were people laying in gutters. You know, there were people beat up, bleeding. The police used to go down there in a paddy wagon, they used to call them. The vans with big backs on them, and they grab the people by the back of the pants and just toss them in the back of the vans and haul them out of town, you know. One day my grandfather came home with a hickey. My grandmother got a knife and stuck him right in the freaking chest. Just missed his heart, you know. And as I watched my dad and my uncle's lives changing from the alcohol, I didn't realize it was alcohol causing these problems back then when I was young. But they started out then, they met these four other brothers, they were American Indians. And they come over and they'd be out there playing Mexican music and dancing every night, you know, drinking. And they did that for a while, and then they started going to bars. And after they started going to bars, they started fooling around with other women and leaving their wives. My dad did the same thing. My mom ended up marrying my dad three times. One time when he left with a woman, he had two kids. And then she took it back. I said, before my mom passed away, I said, Mom, how have you married dad three times? He says, your dad's an alcoholic, but he's a good man. You know? So just because we're alcoholics don't mean we're good people, not good people. But, and I took that, but and I hated it. I honestly hated watching my dad and my uncles do what they were doing to their wives and kids. And I did the same damn thing. Same damn thing. I walked out on a wife and three kids, you know. And we were married 8 years because I started fooling around with another woman. She got me, said, get the hell out, you know. And we just bought a brand new house. I just got a good job with a phone company and doing really good and everything. And I didn't go back. I didn't try to go back. I was talking to my mom one day. She said, you ever ask if you go back and you see if you get back in the house? I said, no. She says, why don't you try that, you know? But I never did. And, but I had my first drink when I was 17, because when I joined the Navy, my dad, my older brother, bought me a quart of beer. And that was the first drink I had. And when I got out of basic training and ended up here in Little Creek, we started going over to the Listen Man's Club. I think it was 3-2 beer back then, but you know, you buy a pitcher of beer for like 25 cents or something. It was real cheap. And we started drinking, and I got aboard ship. Well, when I got to the ship Friday, the end of August, the end of July, I was supposed to report to the ship. Well, I read my orders around Monday. Friday I got there, went to the ship. Monday they came looking for me. I was AWOL. AWOL? What do you mean AWOL? I was supposed to go to Bo Cox's school on the Little Creek Navy base, driving the landing craft. So they put me in the back of a van. I went over there all of August. I learned to drive the landing craft, three different boats they had. You see over there, then, and when they land in Normandy, these boats come and hit the beach and drop the bow, and all the Marines run off. And, you know, then I learned to drive that boat. I learned to drive the Mike 6, which carried a Jeep or a truck. And then they had the Mike 8s, where the bigger ones were carried the tanks and stuff. So I learned to drive all three of those boats. And then I went aboard ship September 1st, and we loaded 300 Marines. They were all just got back from Vietnam. We were taking them down to the Caribbean for a shakedown cruise. And so we took off. We get down there, and they tell you when you go in the military, remember when you go to these foreign countries, you're in their country. You do what they say, or, you know, they'll kill you. Well, we're in a bar, we got to go down the basement, get this bar. You get down there, there's a bunch of Puerto Rican cops in there. And this one of the Marines down there started chasing this woman through the bar, and he shot him in the back and killed him. You know, that's just how it was back in them days. And so we came back after 2 weeks, and the last 2 weeks of September, we loaded supplies and ammunition, and gas, and fueled up. Then we took off the Mediterranean for 6 months. We get over there, And about after 5 months, we're in Italy, Spezia, Italy, and we're getting ready to come home, and they call us all off of leave, shore duty, and being on the beach. They call us all back to ship. We didn't know why. So we get back to ship, and two Air Force planes collided off the coast of Spain. They were refueling and dropped lost nuclear warheads off right off the coast of Spain within a half mile. So they took our ship. We went over there. They unloaded all the Marines of these other ships. I mean, there were aircraft carriers, battleships, you know, every ship you could think of. The president, the vice president was on the beach. And I mean, that's how close we were. You could see them all over there, you know. So we unloaded all of them, and we put Alva, that looks like an egg, diving submarine. You've ever seen them on National Geographic, whatever. We had her on board 89 days. Yeah, 89 days, we take her out, drop it off, until they finally found it at like 80 days or something. When they were bringing up, the cable broke and they lost it again. You know, so they finally found it, and we got it back aboard, and then we went back, came back to the United States. But that ship I was on, we're gone quite a bit. We used to, we went and recovered a capsule, had the monkeys in it, and I crossed the equator, came a shell back. And on the way back, we stopped in just one of these South American towns, you know, on the coast there. We were upstairs in this bar, and I was talking to this girl. They have those girls in these places that kind of entertain you. But I was talking to this girl, and she took off with another guy, and I got pissed off. So I picked up a chair and threw it through the guy's jukebox. You know, I'm 17, 18 years old. This guy comes out from behind the bar with a freaking machete after me. And the only thing that saved my life was the guys on my ship grabbed me and threw me down the flight of stairs. And they told the guys down at the bottom, man, get him out of here. So they threw me in a cab, and the cab driver wouldn't take off. So one of the guys had a beer bottle. He broke it and stuck to the guy's neck. And said, get out of here, or I'll cut your damn throat. So they took me back to the ship. For the next 4 days, I didn't leave that ship. Because that guy would never would have forgot it, you know. But I drank until I was, I drank for 37 years. When I was 24, I got busted for drunk driving in San Francisco. Pull up the light, passed out, and hear this tap, tap, tap keys on the window. California Highway Patrolman. So I got $300 fine. A few years later, I got my second DUI. Had to go to jail, lost my license for a year. Had to do 48 hours in jail. But I didn't stop drinking. One thing that about, I have a huge family back in California. Huge family, brothers, sisters, cousins, and all that. We always party. We played a lot of sports together. We bowled, had poker games. And whenever my family had something going on, we had to rent a hall. Because, you know, Mexicans, got Mexican music, everybody's out there dancing and partying, you know. And that's what we did. And but I never really drank hard liquor. All the trouble I got in is when I drank hard liquor. Like down there in South America, whatever it was, I was drinking rum and coke. In Caribbean, I was drinking rum and coke. We were in St. Thomas, me and these three friends of mine I hung out with all the time. And Mamas and Papas. Anybody here, the Mamas and Papas? Well, there's a bar down there in St. Thomas. That's where they always played at. And we were in that bar, and they came in one night and were playing. Well, we had all the Marines were there with us, and we didn't have any money, so we ran out of stuff to drink, you know. So, but the Marines had these fifths of bottles on the tables, and these guys, let's get out of here, let's go to another bar. So on the way out, the bar, one of the guys grabbed a couple of their bottles of liquor, and then Marines came after it. They chased us all over that island, man. So I got down to the pier where our boat was to take us back to the ship, and I jumped and got down on the inside of it so that he wouldn't see me, you know. And it was crazy, but I just done a lot of things when I was drinking, and I used to do some crazy stuff, but you know, like I said, I was 17 when I first started drinking. I drank, threw a wife and kids. My oldest boy today is 54 years old. And my daughter, 50, I went to her birthday, or 52 now, 2 years ago, I went to her 50th birthday. You know, and I got a big family, and it's just, that's all I did, is party. And when I moved, when I married my first wife, she was my best friend's wife's cousin, and she lived in San Francisco. And what happened with her was, it wasn't her real mother, it was her stepmother, because her stepmother's sister had the baby, and she was separated from her old man. The old man didn't want the baby. So her stepmother took care of her. And she'd come up to Sacramento and party every now and then, maybe once a month, every couple of months. And we're all getting drunk and partying and stuff, and her older sister goes, "Hey, man, why don't you guys go to Reno and get married, you know?" "Yeah, let's go." And I'm getting married. Her dad was pissed off. I mean, he was pissed. His name was Graciano. He's a Filipino. And he lived upstairs in San Francisco on the top floor. We rented a metal flat, and then her mom lived downstairs. And her mom used to go out in her pajamas, walk half block down the street every morning and get a bottle of wine, you know? So it was pretty, it was crazy. I just tell Dennis here that I used to hang out in Haight-Ashbury. All you had to do is walk down the street and you'd be loaded. You didn't have to smoke nothing. Used to hang out at Golden Gate Park. I was telling him I was over in 1968, I was at the Fillmore, and Carlos Santana was playing. I got those two CDs in my car, you know? One thing I never did, I never took any acid or any drugs. I just drank a lot of wine, you know? But just as the years passed, I got hired with a phone company, worked there 36 years, and just kept drinking. And but I was, like I said, I drink beer, and the only time I'd ever get in trouble is when I hung out with my brothers, my uncles, my dad. We always played a lot of golf, you know? And now we'd have these big ice chests like this on each cart, you know? And we'd go get tea times at, you had to go 4:30 in the morning on Tuesday morning to get the weekend tea times. And there'd be about seven or eight of us there getting the tea time. That's 32 or 36 people playing golf. And we were so popular at this one golf course, they used to call us the Casillas Mafia family. And it's kind of funny, but you know, we never bothered anyone. We always mind our own business, but it was, we just had a lot of fun, man. And what happened was I got married again. I was living with different girls every now and then for a month or two or a couple of years or whatever. But when I got on with the phone company, I went and I transferred up in the mountains, up in Placerville there. And we lived there for 23 years. And there was this young guy got hired, his name was Eric. And I started training him to do this one thing that a lot of people didn't know how to do there. And he got married. So what we had, where the wedding was at this one of these vineyards with a big white tent and all this. But to get there from where I live, you had to drive through this canyon. And we stopped and drank before we went through the canyon to get there. And then at the wedding, I'm over there running around talking to everybody. I left my wife sitting back in the corner. And I'm getting drunk, you know, and they had to help her get me in the car to leave. So she gets me in the car, and I don't even remember going home, to be honest with you. The next morning, she woke me up and said, "I almost threw your effing ass up over down that canyon." And I was going to get home, call the cops, and say, "Hey, man, we got an argument. You got the car, and I couldn't find you." That was August 17th, 2002. You know, I remember that. And that scared the shit out of me. Excuse my French. And but she worked with these two women that were in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guess she must have been talking to them about me because they gave her some information about AA. And so that Friday night, I called the number. And this young guy answered. And he said, "Yeah, we'll be here Friday, you know." And so I went down there Friday at 8 o'clock. It was called Motherlode. Where I lived in the mountains was right down, you go down the mountain and you hit the South Fork of the American River. That's where they discovered gold. They got a nice thing down there, a nice monument. If you go down just to visit it, they got a nice park. And you could, you know, search for gold. They put little crumbs of gold in there so you find something. But, you know, and so I went to that meeting Friday and I met this guy there, Robbie. He came up and started talking to me. And he was a Vietnam veteran. And I didn't know any veterans over there, you know, up in the mountains. So we got to talking. He said, "You gonna come back tomorrow?" I go, "I don't know, man, I don't think so." He said, "Hey, come out and finish our conversation." So I went back Saturday, and I've been coming back ever since. He told me when he got to Vietnam, his whole platoon took him off the plane, loaded him up on trucks, took him out of the jungle, and unloaded them all. He said the first night they were there, they got overran. Half the guys he was with got killed. you know. And my brother and my cousin made it out of Vietnam. My cousin's best friend didn't, you know, but it's just stuff like that you hear talking. And being in the service in the military and being out there like they did, you know, they were just taking kids right out of high school, 17 years old out of high school, and shipping them off over there, you know. And they got treated like crap when they got back, you know. But so that kind of makes me sad, to be honest with you. I went back the second day and I talked to Robbie, and then I started just talking to him like a friend. I never really did ask him to sponsor me, and I never did accept the fact that admit that I was an alcoholic. And because then, as the more we got to talking, I was helping him. You know, I thought it, but he was really honestly sponsoring me from under the table the whole time, you know. And then finally, I said, yeah, you want to sponsor me? He goes, yeah, I'll sponsor you, you know. And we got into Big Book, but one thing Robbie did was his sponsor was Annie B. She had 48 years sobriety, and she's really active in the program. And she used to do a Friday night meeting once a month down the hill. He said, you want to go down and help me set up the room for Annie B's meeting this Friday? I go, yeah, I'll go down there with you. So we go down there, we walk in, he says, okay, he says, I got to run the store, set up the room, and I'll be right back. And I did. He comes back, and he says, okay, now go stand at the door and shake hands. You know, what the hell do you mean, you know? But I did it, you know? And, but one thing about him, he was really involved in carrying the message to different groups. You know, we were going down into Sacramento, down the valley, to the work release programs. We're going to all these different rehab centers and stuff. And down in Coloma, there was a meeting there on Wednesday night, and we did that for like 2 years. It was a men's rehab. And they had a campfire behind the building. But if you go down a block, you're on the South Fork of the American River, you know? So what we did is all them guys, the guy run the place, let them, people that were there, take all the logs and stuff down to the river. So we had the meeting down at the river, you know? Big bonfire, and then there were three girls' facilities up around the mountains. They bring them down in vans, and they come down for the meetings, you know? We did a lot of that type of stuff. I sponsored a lot of guys for one day. I was taking guys, they'd ask me to take them to the fourth and fifth step, and there were some of them rehabs. And I'd sit and do it with them. And this 1 year, we got a lot of snow up in the mountains, and the woman coordinator came over to me and Robbie and asked if we'd take the meeting to women's facility up in Pollock Pines. We said, yeah, we'll do it, you know. And she said, we can't get any women because women don't have four-wheel drive, don't drive in the snow. And you get 15, 20 feet of snow up there. And I had a 4Runner at the time. I said, yeah, we could do it. So we did it. And every time we went up there, every Monday we went up there, we took a woman with us to speak, you know. And the first time we walked in, the lady looks at us, she goes, what the hell are you guys doing here? I go, we got a speaker, you know. And we did that for 9 months, every Monday, you know. So we did like 36 meetings we took to them. Even my oldest daughter went up there and spoke one night, you know. But what's so nice about it was, it's like you see on TV, it's a big, beautiful log cabin, the big fireplace, the big kitchen, you know, all this where they were staying. But around that, all the little buildings where the women and kids were staying were little log cabins, you know, and one of them would take turns babysitting each week so they everybody come to the meetings. And I sat in there for that 9 months, you know. I learned a lot from the women. I have a lot of respect for the women, man, you know. And I sponsored three women, and two of them are still there. I've been here for 14 years, and they're still back. When I go home, I go to my old home group, and those two girls I sponsor are still there at the meetings. You know, and it's just, I can't never forget August 17th of 2002, because that's when my life changed. You know, because I didn't give a shit about anybody. None of you. Only thing people I cared about was my family. Today, I just look you all in the eye and tell you I love you. That's how much I've changed. It's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I moved here in 2010, it took me 3 years to get a sponsor. I was still talking to Robbie. I still talk to Robbie all the time. And I was sitting in a Wednesday night meeting with Carrie Lynn, and I told her, Carrie Lynn, I ain't got a sponsor yet. She says, get an effing sponsor, will you? So I asked Buster to be my sponsor. I met Buster when I first got here. Because I had to go back. We moved here in July 2010. 2010, July. We had to wait for the guys to bring all our truck to come unload our furniture. Then I went back of August for a month. I flew back and one of my sponsors picked me up at the airport. And then I stayed all of August. They told me and this other guy, because we're the highest seniority in the group we're with the phone company, that you stay to the end of August, we're going to give us each $100,000 bonus. Well, that never happened. So the first thing I did when I found out that, I started told my boss, I'm out of here. So then I jumped in the car and I drove up. Drove across by the South Pacific, 4 and 5 days. I left Saturday morning and, I left Saturday morning and I got here Wednesday afternoon, you know, and I got to see my wife after a month. Then I went Thursday night meeting, I met Cy. I went for Saturday and Friday night meeting, I met Buster. And I met, I forget the guy's name, did she do the Saturday? Joe and Percy at the Saturday night meeting. And I was going to all the meetings, you know. And after a while, I joined Tuesday Magnolia Brown Bag Group. And I joined that because they told the story how they became a group. They have no money. They didn't have any chips to give out to people. So what they do, all the members, they go to different meetings. And they pick up so you're celebrating 6 months? Yeah, we're celebrating. You get their chips and they bring them back and put them in a brown bag so I can hand them out at their meetings. I thought that was kind of funny. So that's why I joined the group. And I was a member of that group for maybe a little over a year. I was the intergroup rep for them too, and I was going to that Thursday night meeting, 460. Excuse me. And helping Cy set up, and there was Miracle Mike was out there too. Miracle Mike looked like a ZZ Top band player, man. I swear to God, he had the long beard, the long hair, and everything. And he'd be the coffee maker, and me and Cy be out there setting up the room. Cy goes, hey, Dana, you want to give me a hand here? Help me out here? I go, yeah, I'll help you out, Cy. So he gave me a key to the church. And we're sitting around. There was me, Cy, Miracle Mike, Susan Hawkins, and a couple of other women, older women. I said, Cy, I've been saying a home group. He goes, I don't know, man. So we decided we're going to make it a home group. So I called Buster, and he sent Steve Roach over to talk to us about being able to do it. And we became a home group. We've been a home group now for, God, since 2012, I think it was. And then a little while later, I'm sitting around and I told Cy, I says, there's no noon meetings in Suffolk. So we started the Ask Bill Caesar Book Study meetings here in Suffolk, and that's still going on, you know. And what I really like about our home group is we pretty much have the same home group members today, some new ones, but there are, I'd say 95% of them are all still in the home group. And they're really active in the service. Steve sponsored a few of them, you know. But it's just, we don't argue over nothing. Nobody's in charge. We sit, talk, read everything out, and we all vote. We all got the vote, you know. It's just a nice home group, you know. And we all get along good. Everybody participates. Our coffee pot went out on us. So I came in and I said, that's a coffee pot I just bought today. You know, we bought one just like that. But my wife's going, yeah, and then I told old Tim, and he said, maybe too tall to fit in a plastic container, you know. But when I got here, I started going to Maryview because it was a rehab center at the hospital. I started going over there, I picked up 3 sponsees. And I ended up having 5 sponsees, I went into jail for about 11 years with Buster and Arthur every Monday night doing that. And I started sponsoring this one guy. I taught him how to read. I tried to teach him how to drive. Then I said, I got to do this because he hit a wreck. My wife's going to kill me. So I said, I can't do this no more, you know. But then now he's sponsoring people, you know. He's doing really good, you know. And lately I had One of my sponsees moved to Florida. Another one just moved here recently to somewhere east in Virginia. just Joe, he was doing the Saturday night meeting when I got here, him and Percy, and he heard me say I was from Sacramento. He asked me, he goes, where in Sacramento were you? I told him, I said, I lived on 12th Avenue, right off of 12th Avenue. He goes, I live right off 11th Avenue. I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, remember there was a movie theater across the street? I go, yeah. He goes, and remember those two bars down the street? I go, yeah. He goes, now I know you look familiar. He said, you walked off one of my girlfriends that night. I worked with Joe for a while. We had a, you know, he's a good guy. Now him and his wife live down in Florida. But, you know, it's just, you got to give back. You know, it's just my life changed. It's because of this program. You know, like I said, my higher power, that going to Catholic school was my white light. And I still had that. That was my white light opening. And but I quit drinking, but just being able to get involved and know who God was and go to church and stuff, you know. But it's just, it's amazing. If you're new, get a sponsor, get involved in your home group, get a home group, and your life is going to change. You know, just, you got to give up things you don't really want to. But in the long run, it's going to, your life's going to change, you know. I know a lot of people here in Southern. When I was here in 1965, the only two towns I knew was Norfolk and Portsmouth. I never heard of Suffolk. I never heard of any of these other towns around here. There's another one further out, I forget what it's called, but that's the only, there's three towns I knew, heard of here in Virginia. When I got out of the Navy in 1968, I couldn't wait to get the hell out of here. I ain't never going back to Virginia. Just like an alcoholic, look where I'm sitting tonight. You know, it's just, it's crazy. But if I wouldn't have came back here, I wouldn't have met all of you. Every time I go back to California, I go back to my home group. And quite a few of the people are still there. And last, not this June, June 4 last, I went back for 2 weeks and was there. And I went, was going to my home group, went to about four meetings while I was there. And they had a newcomer meeting. And I go, okay, I'm gonna go to that. So I drove over there. And some guys just standing around outside talking. And I walked past them, went into the building, and there's a bunch of women sitting in there. And I go, oh man, I got a little ways in. I go, oh man, it's a woman's meeting. I turn around, I walk down, and I go, so girl goes, it's Dana, he can stay, you know. But I kept walking out, you know. But what I learned there was the newcomer meeting I went to, the guy chairing the meeting had 3 months, the speaker had 3 months. And what they do is when you come in, you should put your name on a blue line piece of paper. And then after everybody comes in and signs it, then they put numbers next to your name. So when the speaker got done, he picked the number and that person shared next. Then after he got done, he picked the number somebody else would share. Because some meetings you go to, you're saying five people every meeting. Sad. You know, Robbie always told me, so whenever you're in a meeting, make sure you share. You may save somebody's life that night. It may be your own. And that's the truth. I chaired a meeting one night, and I was talking to this guy before the meeting. He was from New York, down because his daughter, something happened to his daughter here. And he was sitting over on the table. And I called on him, and he started crying. You know, people need to talk, man. You can't. Some of the people I hear talk all the time, I can tell their stories. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate. It gets that way, you know, but. And since I've been here, there's been one, two, three meetings that fell apart. And what got me when I got here too was some of these meetings weren't even home groups. That's another question. I said, how come these ain't home groups? You know, it wasn't like, it didn't sound the way it was for me back in California. And the reason, they asked me what home group I was, I said, motherlode. Motherlode, shit, you know? Well, they didn't like motherload because what motherload did, they split half because we had single people coming to the meetings with kids. And they didn't want them in there. So the group we went with, we rented a place up on the second floor. The guy downstairs had a tow truck business. And it had a room back in the corner, that little kitchen type thing, and, you know, and a little storage area. And we fixed that room up so the people that were single and had kids, the kids would go in that room and play, and the people would attend the meetings. They put a chair next to the door so they'd be in the meetings too. We had two guys come in there. One guy came in there, got out of hand. A couple of our bouncers took him and threw him over the ledge down on the cars below. Then maybe a year later, another guy was working for this guy, and his wife came in, he fired one of his employees. Well, his employee came in and started beating up him and his wife at the coffee stand, you know. So there goes another guy over the edge, you know. It was crazy. But, you know, we're alcoholics, so you kind of expect stuff like that. But it's just my dad, my uncles all died of lung cancer because they smoked. People born in the 20s and 30s smoked heavy. My mom quit smoking. I could smoke when I was 21 when I got out of the Navy, you know. But it's just listening to people's stories, what they go through and stuff, you know, it's like, there's been some new people been coming in, I'm listening to, and it's like, man, you know, just what I do too is I talk to some girls when they come in. I say, hey, man, if you don't like the way some guy hugs you, stick your hand out and shake their hand when they come up to you. Just the way it is, because there are predators, because I had a predator sponsee, and he blew this. The girl he was with had some time. Before they got together, he was, you know, they say wait a year or whatever before you have a relationship. Oh, we're good. I got 8 years, 9 years sobriety, and I'm good too. I got a year. That guy, I fired him, what he did to her, you know. And then she moved to another state, and now he's back up in Washington, somewhere in California, up north of California. You know, just, I look out for the people nowadays. I was in a meeting one night, and I said, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. After the meeting, this girl comes up to me, she goes, can I talk to you? I go, yeah. She goes, thanks for saying that, because that's the first time I've been called a lady. You know, so it's just little things like that. It's funny, but that's what you do, man. It's, you got to give back. This is all freely given to us, you know. Nobody's in charge. That's my good meetings. We all get to speak our part, you know, and the one thing I didn't like doing was when two people volunteered for a service position and they were both qualified and nice people and stuff, you sent them out of the room, then the home group had to vote on them, and the bad part was when I came back in, you had to tell them who got it. The other person, like, oh man, you know, it's just, it's the way you just got to do it, I guess, but that's the way we did it. But it's just, this program saved my life, man. And that's, like I said, man, it was 45 years ago I was here. Never going to come back to Virginia. And here I am standing here talking to you guys about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. My higher power, the whole time, 37 years I drunk, my higher power was sending me messages. He put me through a car windshield. I came to look, and there was a car. I hit four, and four people standing there, and I hit the car and went through the windshield. Knocked me back in the seat. I'm laying in the seat. I went to open the side door, and the whole side of my car was gone. You know, I put a gun to a man's head and pulled the trigger twice. Good, I was drunk. It's probably safety was on or something, you know. Then I was going down the street to go bowling. My wife's cousin and his wife were visiting us. I told her to ride with them to the bowling alley, and I'll go get my cousin and her husband. Blonde, while you're there, I hit over a kid and kept going. And when I got to my cousin's house, he drank, just like I did. I said, hey, man, you've been drinking. He goes, no. I said, good, get in the car. He said, before, I said, I just ran over a kid. He said, what? But he drove the car back and took the blame. It took me 5 years with a lawyer fighting that. And it ended up being the kid, it was the kid's fault. I was drunk and I hit him, but he came off, ran the stop sign off the hill. Okay, no lights, license on the bike or anything, you know, the motorcycle. And they got that guy for all that stuff. I owe that family in the men's, man, believe me, you know. And the bad thing was, when I hit him, it was a dead end street. I had to go back past their house and get out if I was trying to get out of there. And the kid pops up and he's standing next to me at the window. The driver's window looking at me. That's alcoholic drunk people do. Or what I did anyway, you know, but it's just, I got elected union president for 3 years, and I fought a lot of managers with the phone company. I took all the people that were union stewards and put it with us, and we read the contract. So we ever met with the union management, I mean, the company management, we went right by the book. I told the vice president, big guy in California for AT&T, they were going to contract a workout in Lake Tahoe, because when you come off the mountain in Lake Tahoe, there's a manhole right in the middle, and that would have messed up traffic. He says, he comes walking in with five or ten little cronies behind him in this big meeting room. He goes, I got some good news. This, that we're going to contract that workout in Lake Tahoe. And I stood up, I says, if you are. And he looked at me, he said, we're going to talk. I said, damn right we're going to talk. He didn't talk to me. Next day he sent one of his district managers up to talk to me. We got the job because our people wanted it. And then they started complaining because they were there for 2 years doing the job. They had to stay in hotels and stuff. So hey, you wanted to work, you got it, you know. But it's just, I've done a lot of things. Then they gave me 45 techs to take care of for 6 months. They got rid of all our field managers. Took my boss and took him into dispatch, rearranged that, and he said, my boss wants to talk to you. I go down the next day and talk to her, Dorothy. She says, I need you to take over Mike. I says, doing what? She says, running the crew out there. We had three different crews, 15 techs in each crew. So I said, well, let me think about it, Dorothy. She says, I can't make you manager because you just got rid of them all. But I'll keep you as a senior pay, you know. So I got inside her door, and all I heard do was, when I walked out her door, it was like, ka-ching, ka-ching. I was going to make a lot of money. And I did, because every time they called me after work at home, I got paid for 6 hours if I talked for 2 minutes, you know. Another thing I did, I was sober when I did all this, was I took, a little dishonest with her, but we had two guys work up in the mountains, right, foothills, and we get in a lot of trouble because we missed a lot of trouble tickets up there. And I had them, I told them, look, you guys go up there, take your company vans, and if we get any trouble tickets up there, you guys take care of them before you go home. And I'll let you take your vans home. And they did it. We didn't have any more misses up there. And she didn't know it. And she found out, she said, you did that? I go, how many misses did you have up there, Dorothy? Well, we quit getting misses on trouble tickets. So I just looked at her and I said, you got the work done, you know? But then they offered me the job as a manager. I turned it down, you know, just, I was having too much fun. But I think, I got about another minute and I'll quit. But honestly, if it wasn't for my wife threatening to throw me down a canyon, I wouldn't be here tonight. Because that scared the living hell out of me. And I drank for 37 years, and nothing scared me. You know, but that did. Because she would have got away with it. That was a good, man, I couldn't come up with a better thing than that, you know. But I'm still married during the day. I've been married 44 years. We have 2 kids, 3 granddaughters. They're living about a mile from where I used to live in California. And we moved here because of them, because they were here. And like I said, they're following your kids. It just, and I like, now I like Virginia. I'm used to it. I can find my way around. What I like right now, we just moved into a 55 and older condo community across the street from the Dodge dealer down here. And what I like about it is when I leave that condo and go out Murphy's Mill, it's all open fields. That's why I grew up in open fields. There's horse ranch out there, you know, big horse ranch. And by the time I drive over and get over on Godwin or whatever, Main Street, you know, I always go the back way to avoid them places. But it's just so nice to drive out and see open fields, you know. It takes me back to my younger days when I lived down in Brighton. But I could talk about a lot of other stuff, but I won't. I was discriminated against a lot, and that kind of gave me my character defects. One of the reasons it did, I had a hard time doing my fourth and fifth step. So Robbie gave me 175 questions, and as I wrote out the answers, it brought me back, you know, to do my fourth and fifth step. It really helped me, because I couldn't think of it. I never did anything wrong. I didn't hurt anybody, you know. And one time I was coming, I used to work down the street from my ex-wife after she lost our house. They moved into these apartments, And she lost one of the car she had. She lost that. And I was coming down the main road, 47th Avenue, and her and my three kids were at a bus stop waiting for the bus, and I drove right on by them. I could have stopped and picked them up, gave them a ride wherever they were going. I didn't. The alcohol had control of me, you know. So thank you all for being here tonight. I appreciate it. Thank you, Gabrielle. I adopted her. She's my daughter. But it's you got to talk about why you're here, you know. Get a home group, get a sponsor, work the steps, get involved in service, and your life will change. Every one of them promises that they read came through to me. I had $35,000 in debt my wife didn't even know about. You get those things in the mail, you qualify for $3,000 loan. I get that thing, go get that $3,000. You know, I did that about four or five times. I take a second mortgage out of my house, didn't tell my wife. But I'll tell you what, and I had my neighbor, I had to go to Reno for 2 weeks training, and I said, look, do me a favor, I'm gonna give the key to the mailbox and go over there every day, because my wife gets off at 5, pull these bills out. And he did, for the first week. The next week, about Wednesday, I'm sitting in class, and my phone's going, bam, bam, bam. I go, oh shit, she found out. And she did, because his mother had cancer, and he had to take her to the hospital that day, he didn't get the mail. So she seen that one bill for $4,000 or $5,000, then she went online to check her credit score. She goes, and I had to drive home and face that Friday, you know. Yep, that was me, Dana, alcoholic, thanks.
Thanks again, Dana. And I appreciate everyone that was here tonight. Our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers donations to the church and supplies. The rest is given to the Tidewater Intergroup, District 24, and the General Services Office. Any AA-related announcements?
My name is David, I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, David!
We have a special anniversary this month. Mike W. is going to be celebrating 2 years of continuous sobriety. So the last Friday this month, so not this upcoming Friday, but the next one. And the speaker is going to be Richard. I forget his last initial. Biker Richard.
Brian.
Brian? Is it Brian?
Yeah, Brian.
Oh.
Brian B.
Oh, dang, I messed that up.
Biker Brian.
Biker Brian, that's what it is. Okay, not Biker Richard. Thanks, Steve. Anyways, it's going to be a good time. Next week is also not Richard. We have a good speaker. I'm messing up, but thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, David.
I'm not lonely, David.
Dana.
Hey, Marshall, our home group is going to be celebrating anniversary, home group anniversary. This year, we're just going to have meeting of the speakers. So that'll be in March. More to follow. And
Thursday night.
All right.
We'll pass the flyers out of there.
Brian, I'll call it.
Hey, Brian.
This is not through AA, but they have a sober Super Bowl party February the 9th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Norview United Methodist Church in Norfolk. And it's going to be some good food. There are going to be door prizes. And the whole recovery community is welcome. Like, it was put on by my alumni coordinator from rehab.
Cool.
It's
going
to be a good time.
Sounds like it. Besides speaker meetings on Fridays at 8, we also have a big book study on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Steve, would you mind passing out the chips?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Good evening. My name is Steve Rocha, and I am an alcoholic.
Steve.
We give up these chips to commemorate our journey in sobriety. You know, we hear a lot of variations, and it used to kill me when I'd hear people say, oh, this is the one you can pick up with alcohol in your breath. Man, I was at a meeting
on the other side of town on Friday night, we saw a guy come in to pick up a white chip 1 week, and two weeks later, he had like a 3-year medallion. See, we'll give you one of these chips for as long as you say you've been sober. That's the bottom line. Because everything we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is on the honor system. So if you say you've been sober for 3 years, we'll take your word for it. You know, what are we going to do? Check your sobriety date? I mean, come on. So we got into the habit of giving these out. We give them out at this group, as in many groups, to mark our way in the journey. So this is a white chip. Anybody like to start this way of life? Say they didn't have a drink on a Friday night and downtown Metropolitan driver. All right, we've got a 30-day chip. And we have a 60-day chip. There's a 90-day chip. Now these are all counting weekends and holidays. And there's a blue one for 6 months.
Yeah.
There's a green one for 9 months, and a yellow one for 1 year or more, not a member of this group. When you join our home group, we splurge a little bit because we make a big deal out of it. It's a big deal when an alcoholic can stay sober for 6 months, and so when we get a year of sobriety or any multiple of years, we have a party, man. We have a cake, ice cream, whatever, and because it's a big deal. It's a big deal for an alcoholic to stay sober for a week, much less a year. So when you join this home group, we'll get you a nice bronze medallion with the Roman number of years you've been sober. And when Mike's anniversary rolls around, we're going to have cake, ice cream, piñatas, there's going to be pony rides for the kids. We're going to do it all up. Thank you.
Cheers to those chips.
I don't think church will allow that.
We at the Interaction Group believe that one of the important keys to long-term contented sobriety is effective sponsorship. If anyone here tonight needs a sponsor, please see me after the meeting and we'll hook you up. Interaction is a home group. If anyone here tonight is looking for a group to join, you're welcome here. For those of you that will, please join me in saying the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. Work should be work. It's so good.
I just got to work. I didn't take that phone call, but if I did, I framed my thing up. Drinking because I was too late. Sorry.
Thank you for chairing, sir. Good job.
You know, they've been checking on you. You know, your early
ones have checked.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, nice to meet you.
All right.
Did you go to that meet no on Saturday nights? The one in Portsmouth?
Scout's Cabin?
Well, no, the one, is it Scout's Cabin or is the one off George Washington Highway?
Hello.
The only Portsmouth meeting I've been to is the one in Scout's Cabin, I guess Churchland, but okay. That's Churchland.
Okay. I mean, do they move it to the cabin?
I don't know.
Because it's listed online as
I think it is the cabin.
Move to cabin?
I think it is.
Okay. And I saw where it still says online, 4700 George Washington Highway.
Yeah.
Somebody might want to look into that.
I've never seen it. Yeah. Never seen it. I've never been there.
Yes, sir. That's what's still listed as right now. So somebody should look into it, man, for sure.
How people going to Bob's course? Said our name, ain't nobody gonna be there.
What'd you say?
You'll have people going to the see, it's a Bon Secours.
Yeah, yeah.
47 George Washington. Yeah. It's like a Bon Secours. Yeah. Like the Bon Secours. You'll have people going there, ain't nobody gonna be there. Yeah. I don't think we have, I don't know who's in charge of that, but they got they need to like up there.
Was you trying to show up there? There wasn't anything?
No, but I looked online to see where. You know, see where it was, and that's what it showed.
Yeah, I've never, I've only been to the Scouts Cavern.
What's up with you?
Not much.
You all right?
I'm all right. Look, I can get this other job at the rehab place, but I got to wait 2 more months. Because...
Thank you. I was like, damn it. I have to buy you or steal
it.
How did you get that offer out of Key?
There's a silver.
One of his original sponsors.
Okay.
Yeah, I just could never guarantee what would happen there. I mean, at first it didn't necessarily scare me, but
yes.
I mean, I'd black out and then I just don't remember where I got home. My car was paid for, of course, this was years ago. He parked sideways, covered in blood. I grew up in Arizona, and I was like, we're free in blood. Couldn't tell you, you know, and I was just like,
you're a room full of people, bro.
I'm
like, run out,
guys.
Well, if you want some help, there's a bunch of guys. Half of them aren't here tonight for some reason.
In fact,
they'll coordinate and take the night off.
Well, they're going to hurt. So it either makes it or it doesn't. So I kind of did it like this. Whatever, begrudgingly, and
she's got four more. Okay, so anyway, come Tuesday night. Thank you.
Very kind of you.
Well, I signed up for.
Where are you? Go. That's passive aggressive.
Every one of them. And you know what?
We got a big new study here on Tuesday, so if you're over in this area, there's a ton of meetings. But you'll see it on there.
Yeah, it's not far.
You know what I just realized?
Yeah.
The 31st, which is Mike's anniversary, I got tickets to see Grand Park Railroad. Because I told him, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to be here.
Mike GFR.
Good to see you. Nice to meet you, Dale.
Nice to meet you.
Hope to see you on Tuesday.
Yeah, come on down, man. Come back.
One of the biggest draws for a casino for me was the fact that they gave me drinks for it.
Yeah.
Which exacerbated my losing.
I was in Costa Rica, and whenever you're in a foreign country, one of the things that you do is ask whoever's running the hotel where you say where the expat bar is, because there's always a bar where people that speak English will accumulate. Canadian, Australian, British,
right.
And I said, where's the expat bar? So they told me where it was. So down there, they're drinking. I was drinking. I was sober.
Right.
There was a young guy there. He was in the military, and he got out of the military, and he went back to work for the military in Iraq, and he was making stupid amounts of money. And he wasn't married or had any kids, and he didn't live anywhere. So what he would do is that he would go to Iraq, make a ton of money, and then for like 3 months or whatever he'd have off, he'd go to Costa Rica and just do cocaine and sleep with hookers and have a good old time, you know? He was having a great time. So he goes, I'm gonna walk over to the casino, you wanna walk with me? I said, casino's the industry, but it was a block away from where I was staying. So I said, yeah, I'll walk with you. So we got to my street, and I was like, you know what, I'll walk over there. Because it was brand new. It was a brand new casino. I said, I'll walk over here and see what it looks like. I go in, there's all kinds of people. They see that we're Americans. They like the Red Sea party. Come on in, you know?
It's a huge casino. And the first room I walk into, it's just all people gambling. Just crazy.
So it's
crazy,
really
all the machines.
You want to take that back there?
No, I got you.
No. Then the second part was there was a set of glass doors, and through the glass doors there was a pool, and there was a bar, and that's where the DJ was set up, and that's where the music was played. So we could hear the music thump 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 thump. So after I saw all the people gambling, I said, let's go, you know, see the music. So me and this other guy, that guy's in like his 30s. That was in like my late 40s, maybe early 50s.
Bobby.
Yes,
we walked through the glass
you
door,
more
and I kid you not, there's like 12 guys.
Yeah, we're,
I walked through the door, right? And there's like 12 guys and like 170 women.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because they're all your Costa Rican girls dressed to the nines, hoping to meet an American guy. Whatever. So in other words, the pickings were very good now.
Okay.
That's not true. That's a true story too. True story. It was 12 guys. I counted them around, and it was about 170. There it is.
Yeah, senorita.
Lots and lots and lots and lots of them.
Yeah.
Had a good time that night.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Good to see everybody.
See you, Greg.
Right.
I'm safe.
What?
Yeah, that's what they just told me. They just told me. I'm just repeating what I was told.
What the hell are they telling you for?
Bob, I don't know, brother. I just do the work.
He does the work.
I told you to hate it.
Oh.
Yes, now just to call Steve a liar. I think he just called you a liar, Steve.
I am not surprised because I was well known as a liar. And
that is the name.
And Greg just said to me this before the meeting started, he said, stop lying, you're not a good liar. He just said, oh, and the recorder's still going.